Welcome to Hot Weekly.
I'm Jonathan.
I'm Crystal.
And this is Haunt Weekly, a weekly podcast for the haunted attraction and haunted entertainment industry. Whether you're an actor, owner, or just plain aficionado, we aim to be the podcast for you, good sir and or madam. I'm not here to judge. So,
Crystal, or other.
Or other, non-binary, whatever. It does not matter. As long as you listen, you're welcome here.
Yeah.
So how are you doing, Crystal?
Tired, honestly.
Tired. Oh my god, yeah, we are literally recording this a few hours before it goes live. It's been a busy weekend.
Yeah.
People in town, concert last night.
Playing tour guide all weekend, so.
You know, living in New Orleans has its pluses and its minuses. The pluses are you get to live in New Orleans.
Yes.
The minuses are that you get to live in New Orleans.
Yeah.
It's all
pretty much. It's the same thing.
It's the same thing. The things you love about the city are things that draw other people here, and those people want to do them every time they visit. So yes, we've been running around the French Quarter, going to a concert at Champion Square that was less than wonderful in some respects.
Not to the bands.
Not the bands. Look, Panic at the Disco and Weezer, great bands to see live. Champion Square, a terrible place to see a concert.
Yes.
Just saying.
Yes, I'm not sure if that or Blue Bayou was worse, because I went to that one last year.
Quick question while we're talking about concerts and bands. It's off topic. But who the hell looks at an outdoor venue in New Orleans in June and goes, concert?
I have no people behind Champion Square. People who don't live here but think it's a good idea. That's who.
The air is so muggy this time of year. Yeah. I have to hand it my wallet every time I leave the house.
Yeah.
It's literally mugging me. But yeah, anyway, that's all aside. We're here to talk about haunty stuff. That's neither here nor there.
Uh-huh.
Thank you very much for joining us this week and putting up with our shenanigans.
Yeah.
But yes, we have a lot to go through this week because this is episode 28. 28 divisible by 4 means
the news.
We're doing the news this week. That's right. It's your monthly news show. It's all about the news and the noose, because this is the haunted entertainment industry.
Are we just changing news to noose now?
We should. We really should.
So we're just going to call it the noose?
You can tell this podcast is recorded live in front of two idiots who don't think this stuff through.
No, it's by two idiots, not in front of.
Oh, it's in front of two. Don't think this crap through. You probably should. But yes,
sleep deprivation. Great.
This is going to be a fun podcast, everyone. All right. But yes, we have first things first, we have conference reminders to go through. And Crystal, will you be so kind as to kick this off?
Sure. We start off with Chicago Frights, July 29th through 31st, Orland Park, Illinois. Giorgio's Quality Inn and Suites, ChicagoFrights.com for more information.
Yes, this is the, as we've discussed previously, kind of the sister conference to HauntCon.
Right.
So definitely go check it out. We don't have any more in June. I just realized that.
Yeah.
Apparently other people got the memo that June's a crappy time for conferences and get-togethers.
Yeah.
The haunt industry figured it out.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Okay, up next is a new addition to this one. We found out about this one. Haunt Fair. It is August 6th through 7th at the Clarion Hotel in Ranconcoma, New York.
That's close enough.
It's good enough. It's hauntfair.com. That's HAUNT-FAIRE. It's the fancy fair.
Yes.
.com. They are having a fashion show, a car show, an art show, and other types of shows.
Yes.
That actually seems pretty cool. Uh-huh. And also, to be clear, this was on the site, they are doing a haunted tour bus of Long Island, which will hopefully be visiting the Amityville Horror House, which we'll be discussing in a minute here.
Yes.
But yes, it's a haunted tour bus, not a tour of haunts.
Right.
That confused the heck out of me when I visited the site.
Right, so it's like a sightseeing bus.
Yeah, exactly.
Where they talk about all the tragedy and death of the area.
Yes, exactly, exactly. But if you're on the West Coast instead of the East Coast,
you can go to Scare LA, August 6th and 7th also, at the Pasadena Convention Center, ScareLA.com. And it's hosted by the lovely Elvira.
Elvira is still kicking butt and taking names after all these years.
Yep.
Man. After that, September 9th through 11th, it's Maskfest at the Marriott Indianapolis East at maskfest.com. They did no mucking about with their domain name.
Very good on them.
It's 8 letters. I like that domain.
Yes.
Easy to say on the air.
All right. And then we have, and I think this might be finally, Legendary Haunt Tour, November 11th through 12th. It's in Pittsburgh. We don't know what hotel yet. It's TBA. It's by the Transworld people. They're visiting Scare House and 100 Acres Manor. LegendaryHauntTour.com with 2 T's.
Yes, and I am not repeating my usual joke here. And no, the hotel, check, the hotel is still TBA. I realized I forgot to check before I came in here.
Okay.
I wanted to make sure, you know, because that's how we roll here. We're professionals.
Professional idiots at your service.
Please do not attempt these stunts.
Oh, God.
Yeah, we should not do the sleep deprived.
Wow. And you're a professional worder.
I know. I word professionally. This is my day job, and this is not good. All right. But yes, we have the news this week, and I'm actually really excited about this because this is kind of a weird season for haunting. A lot's going on in the main news, so to speak. But this is permit season.
Yes, it is.
It's when all the haunts are seemingly getting or losing or whatever their permits. So we have a whole wide run about permits, haunts opening, closing, where they're moving to, etc. Excited about that. And we've got a story at the end that if we're a little short and we need to pad our time out a little bit, a topic we can discuss.
Wow.
I know. It's almost like I planned that part.
Yes. And if you didn't realize that it is June already.
Yeah, I know.
And haven't applied for your permit. You should probably think about doing that.
That would be a good time, as you're going to find out in a minute. But we actually don't start out with permitting and haunt movie news.
Darn, that was a great segue into it.
I know. I tried. I am a professional, like I said. but no, we start out back in Long Island again, as the Amityville Horror House is back on the real estate market again. Just 4 years, I think it was, since it was last haunted. Now, this is an article from Chris Boyle at longisland.com. And basically, this is the house that was the scene of the 1974 murders upon which the 1977 film was, quote-unquote, based upon.
Right.
Long and short of it is, the DeFeo family was murdered there by the eldest son. A couple, George and Kathy Lutz, moved in. They claimed the house was haunted, and they ran screaming from the house 28 days later. Supposedly, the Amityville Horror movie is based upon their experiences in the house.
Right. Also, this made it to the new Join or Die by Craig Ferguson on an episode of that.
Mm.
Because it was one of the Can It Be Explained? No, it was
the
greatest mysteries of the U.S. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it actually stuck around for a little bit. Yeah, well, I don't think it was one of the first ones axed, but
It hung around. It's interesting. Join or Die, for those who've never seen it, check it out. It's awesome. It's a History Channel show hosted by Craig Ferguson, formerly of The Late Late
Show. We
like
Craig Ferguson.
He's fun. but it's a list and a topic show type thing where they try to decide history's most blank.
Right.
They put 6 people on the board, and he and a panel of people who are apparently just as sage as the two of us.
Yes.
Try to hash this out.
Sometimes less so.
Sometimes he has actual experts.
Sometimes. Well, yeah, there was an astronaut.
There was an astronaut on there talking about space stuff.
Scientists,
that was pretty good.
And historians, and every once in a while.
He gets a couple of experts in there every once in a while. It happens. It's not totally off the wall.
I would actually like to see more of those. Not that this would ever get to him, but if it happens to, get more experts on your panels.
Yes, definitely.
All right, sorry.
But yes,
go back to the house.
The horror house. Is back on the real estate market. If you are so inclined to purchase this for one reason or another,
yes.
The rundown of the house is featured. So it's a 5-bedroom, 3.5-bath house, 11,000 square feet, only slightly haunted.
11,850. That 850 is important.
Yes, it's almost 12,000.
That might be the most haunted part.
Who knows? Yes. It is currently on sale for $850,000, but that is actually a steal. Because it has been on the market for as high as $1 million, and the owner who is selling it now bought it just a few years ago for $950,000.
Right.
And interestingly, the reason she's buying it, she's putting it back on the market, is because her husband died.
Oh.
So I don't know if that helps or hurts the hauntiness.
Yeah, you need proof of intent and ability to buy to see the house.
Yes, other than the bus tour that's apparently going by there.
Yeah.
As part of a haunt fair.
Well, yeah, you can drive by, but to go inside and everything. Yeah.
Yeah, it's actually, it's a really, really nice house, honestly. If you look at the article, the photos of it, it's really, really pretty. Yeah. You never would guess anything bad ever happened there, frankly. It looks like just a lovely house.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's bizarre. It's a little bit out of my price range, I won't lie.
Oh, yeah.
It's significantly out of my price range, and I don't think I can even form the intent and ability to go see it.
Right.
But, yes, if you are so inclined and so interested, go check it out. It is definitely a major haunted attraction in and of itself, even though it's a residence. It's one of the stops on every haunted tour in Long Island, that's for sure.
Yeah. No kidding.
So yeah, if you want to go check it out, go take a look. All right, now actual haunted attraction news now. We got to shift gears here.
Yay!
The first one, this one actually is really exciting news here. Demented FX is moving their haunted house called Haunted House. I'm not sure about that one. From East Hampton to Holyoke. Now, it's interesting. The headline belies the deeper truth here.
Okay.
This is an article by Michelle Williams at MassLive.com, which is like a Massachusetts publication. But they are moving from one town to another, but they're like 6 miles apart.
Right.
This is not really leaving the region by any stretch of the nature.
No, they'll still be easy to find for the locals.
Yeah, if you happen to be in East Hampton and really love them, there's no trouble getting to Holyoke, I'm just saying.
Is it Holly or Holyoke?
Holyoke is, I don't know. I don't know enough about Massachusetts to tell you. I think you're right, I think it's Holyoke, though.
Yeah, I think I've heard that somewhere.
All right. Anyways, it's not a huge difference from in terms of geography.
No.
What is a huge difference is they are moving from an 8,000 square foot location to a 15,000 square foot location in an old abandoned warehouse that looks scary as all hell.
Yeah, which that's quite an upgrade. That is, so,
and they have an option to expand to 45,000 square feet. Holy cow!
Yeah, that's a pretty good option.
That's a very good. Well, you know, and we talk about this all the time, how the industry is trending towards smaller, more compact haunts.
Right. Either smaller, more compact, or I have seen places where, you know, they get the 45,000 square feet, but they break it up into multiple attractions.
Yeah. Haunted parks, so to speak. Yeah.
Right. Which, that seems to be a good business model.
It does. I mean, and this is something to talk about obviously later too, but it shortens queue lines.
Yes.
Because now you have three or four queue lines or whatever.
Yeah, we talked about that
one
a little
giant,
bit.
I think we did actually, you're right.
Yeah.
And it lets you do a lot of value added stuff, upsell tickets and so forth. Rather than having one giant $35 ticket, you can sell three $15 tickets.
Right.
And that looks really, really good to people coming into the line. So, yeah, it's a really neat idea. I'm very happy about this expansion. These guys are deeply beloved in Massachusetts.
Yeah.
Everything I read about them, I'm not familiar with their haunt, but everything I've read about them, everything I've seen, has shown that they are deeply loved in their community, and this is a very exciting opportunity. And what blows my mind is not only did they draw 10,000 people last year,
right,
but they're doing this move now. They just announced the move.
Yeah.
They're opening at the new location October 1st.
That's going to be a heck of a task.
Guys, if you're listening to this podcast, stop listening now and get back to work.
Yes, or just put it over the speakers.
Or put it over the speakers, yeah, or something. But yeah, just work. Get to work, damn it. Get to work. I'm sure they know this.
I'm hoping that it doesn't turn out to be... Okay, so here in New Orleans, we had a haunt called Gentuba's.
Yeah.
And it was severely damaged in Katrina. It was well-loved, well-traveled by people, yeah, in the area. So they moved, and it was probably 6 miles or less.
Yeah, they moved. Actually, it was less than that. They moved, yeah, just up the road. They moved less than 1 mile, if I remember correctly.
No, it was more than that. But
it wasn't much. It was definitely less than six.
Yeah.
Six gets you from our house to there.
Nobody could find it.
Yeah, nobody could find it.
And it failed partially because nobody could find it.
Yeah, nobody could find it. They were paying rent because previously they'd been a pure charity haunt, and they had been operating on the grounds of the school they were supporting.
Correct.
Chinchuba School, I believe, was the name of it. It's actually the name of the school, isn't it?
I don't think so. It's the school for the the blind and deaf, I believe.
It's a local school here, and it was a very, very the Chinchuba Institute. I was right.
Oh, okay, cool.
I was actually right on that one. How often does that happen?
I didn't know that that was a real word.
It's a real word, okay?
I thought they were being very creative with their name. Apparently not.
No, it's actually part of their... But yeah, it's actually the charity they were supporting.
Yeah.
They had to pay rent. They had this new location. No one could find them. They had to pay rent, and it just sunk them.
Yeah.
They went from being an established tradition of like 10 years or more. More than a decade.
I think more than that.
I'm being very conservative with my estimation here. And then in 1 year, the new location, they were done.
Yeah. So hopefully these guys will be able to get it out to their fan base, new location, the maps everywhere. Because that was part of the problem for Chinchubas, was that they didn't have an online presence because, it was, 15.
It was all volunteer base.
Yeah, it was volunteer base, and it was, 15 years ago?
Yeah.
So... Social media wasn't as big of a deal then as it is now.
It was about 10 years ago all this went down. Yeah. 2006 or so.
Yeah. So, there wasn't a lot of places. And we didn't see signs at the old location telling you where to go for the new location. It gave you an address, but it didn't, explain it very well.
There's definitely risk in moving your haunt, even if it is a huge upgrade.
Right. And it is. And
This is a mammoth upgrade.
It
doesn't seem to. It seems to be one that they are very happy about and very much sought after. Unlike the upgrade at Chinchuba's, which was, as you noted, less sought after. They were perfectly happy in their location, but they had damage from the storm.
Right.
They had to move.
So, yeah, the building was condemned, basically.
Yeah. I don't think the building's there anymore, is it?
No, they tore it down.
Yeah. Well, speaking of haunts that are making returns.
Woohoo!
Disturbia in the Park will return to Rosemont, Illinois, near Chicago. This is one of the more major, one of the major suburban haunts in Chicago.
Right.
Will return next year for their third year. This is interesting. The village trustees approved the ordinance on May 11th. We're just now hearing about it. And it's a 2-year agreement with Disturbing Productions LLC.
Right.
That makes me antsy to hear 2-year agreement.
Well, weren't they...
They were in danger of being shut down, yeah.
Yeah, and weren't they moving around each year?
Yes, I think so.
So,
yeah.
I think I remember that from the article yesterday.
Yeah, they're in the basement of a parking garage now.
Right.
Which actually is a really brilliant idea.
It is. That's pretty
great. I saw that, I went, damn it!
Yeah.
Damn it! That is genius!
Yeah, it is.
Flipping genius! Oh my god! Why didn't I think of that?
Yeah.
Parking's built in!
It is!
Oh my god!
And how many horror-themed shows or movies involve attacks in parking garages?
Oh man. Well, I mean, yeah, you talk about ambiance built in. Parking garages scare the hell out of me now.
Yeah. Footsteps echoing.
Everything echoes. It's all gray and musty and
yeah.
This is
and you park and there's lots of cars, so you feel safe. And you come back at 2 a.m. and there's only you.
Yeah, one car way in the center of the lot, and the lights buzzing and humming,
yes,
and blinking off and on.
Yeah,
yeah. The story tells itself.
It does.
Now, they run a 20,000 square foot haunted attraction with 35 rooms, but they're doing something that you have talked about on this podcast, the idea of allowing guests to choose their fate and their path.
Right.
The article is not clear about how this works.
Yeah.
But it's a very, very cool idea.
Yeah. If you've ever done the choose your own adventure stories as a kid, it's like that.
Yeah.
And it is a reason for customers to come back.
Yeah.
And, it's obviously been working for them.
It obviously has, and I'm very excited for them to have a more permanent location and a more permanent ability to function.
Right.
It sounds like they've been on knife's edge for a while, so this is some great, great news. I really hope that this is more than a 2 year.
You hope it gets extended.
I hope it gets extended. I hope they're able to stay there for 2 years and keep Brock, and I'd love to see these guys. It sounds awesome.
Yeah.
Very, very excited about what they do. But yeah, the choose your own adventure idea is one I've always loved too. It's just it's never been horribly practical for us.
Right.
A, because of our limited size, and B, because of staffing and everything else. They seem to have cracked that nut, and I really want to see it.
Yeah. But I want to see how they do it.
I want to see how they do it. But we talk all the time about, in video game circles, about replayability.
Right.
How replayable is this game? Can we sit there? Can we go through it again? Is it going to be the same thing? Is it going to be different?
Yeah.
How exciting is it on the second pass-through? Haunts have low replayability, so to speak.
Yeah, they do, unless you really love them.
Unless you really, really love them. We know people who go through, like, House of Shock every weekend.
Yeah, well, I mean, there was a time... We go through, like, 13th Gate several times a year, and...
Well, if we're able to, we do.
I remember the first year we went is what I'm thinking of. So this was a little while ago.
Yeah.
But, and the reason was, is we would find new people to take.
Yeah, like, that's true, yeah.
Come on, let's go see it. And then get their reactions, and then we would talk about it.
And they're all like, stop kidnapping me, I'm just a homeless person you found. Please, yeah. Don't throw me in the truck, no duct tape. Don't use duct tape.
Oh, God. Oh, we're so gonna get busted. But, no, we've done that with House of Shock and Mortuary and Rise, even. We've taken people... After we've gone for the season, the one time we were planning on squeezing in, we've squeezed in other times to take new people.
Yeah. So that is a good way to extend it, the replayability a little bit, is to have new people to take.
Right.
But, you know, this is actually building in the replayability into the launch.
It is, and this is also... I could see them selling season tickets.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Because if I could get a season ticket to that, I would probably go every weekend.
Yeah.
Just to try to figure out how many possibilities there are.
Yeah, I think that's a neat idea.
Yep.
All right. So, moving on, though, to sadder, more sad news.
We haven't talked about sad news.
That's true. We've not talked about any sad news. Closing of the crypt. Darkwing Manor is liquidating its assets. This is in Medford, Oregon, for those who were, unfortunately, were getting to this after the sale took place. In fact, just after the sale took place.
Yeah.
But
they do have some things on eBay, though.
Okay, so yeah, you can go check it out. But Darkwing Manor in Medford, Oregon has closed its...
Morgatorium Museum.
No, the full name is Darkwing Manor and Morgatorium Museum. They closed in 2014. It's a mouthful.
Right.
They closed in 2014. The owners are liquidating their assets. They put between 800 and 1,000 different items on sale. Now, the in-person sale took place June 11th and 12th, but as you noted, they have some stuff still on eBay.
Right.
So you are perfectly free to go check them out there. And it's interesting, we were talking about the parking garage just a minute ago.
Right.
The main reason they closed was parking restrictions.
Yeah.
In fact, parking restrictions are so bad at this haunt, they were so confining to them, that when you read the in-person sale description,
right,
it's like, please carpool.
Yeah. His parking's still a problem. No. Even to get to the sale where we're selling everything.
To close out because of parking.
Yes.
My God, I mean...
That's just really sad.
That's really sad.
That might have been a situation to get somebody with a cabbie license and shuttle people in.
You know, I'm not going to Monday morning quarterback them. I think they probably did the best they could.
Oh, I'm sure they did.
But the thing about it is this, and what kills me is I actually looked into this haunt a little bit when I was doing these notes.
Uh-huh.
I have not seen a haunt with this beloved by the community and this many positive reviews on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
They had like a 4.9 on Facebook.
Wow.
I mean, it blew my doors off to see people talking about them. And to be closed due to parking restrictions, man, that breaks my heart.
Yeah.
That haunts, and haunts come, haunts go, I get it.
Yeah.
But of all the reasons for a haunt to close, that's got to be one of the most painful.
Yeah.
You're doing everything right with your haunt. You're doing everything right with your promotion. You're getting people there, but they can't flipping park because of probably some kind of stupid ordinance or whatever.
Yeah.
Or uncooperative neighbors or whatever. I don't know the full story of the parking, but man, that is killer.
Yeah, it is.
So, heart goes out to them. It's especially difficult to have to sell all these assets off. But if you are in the Oregon area, or if you want to have something shipped to you, check out their eBay store. And I don't know. It sounds weird, but it's doing a little bit to help support the haunt community by keeping and supporting haunts that are closing down and keeping that money circulating amongst us.
Right.
It's still sad as hell, though.
Yeah, it is.
Now, this next one story is pretty interesting. A man wanted to open up a haunted attraction in Bittern, Victoria, in Australia.
Right.
But was denied.
Yeah, and basically what happened was the city council, received 11 objections from residents.
Yeah.
And so over 11 objections, they decided to not grant it.
And by all accounts... Go ahead. No, go ahead.
Okay, so basically, I don't get this objection to this. And the reason I don't get it was because he was doing something for primary kids.
Yeah.
This wasn't supposed to be a big scare attraction. Low to medium key is what it was targeting.
This was not the Darkness 2.0. This was not the Blackout.
Or a McCamey Man.
Or anything like that. He was doing... By all description, a very tame haunted attraction targeted at kids.
Right.
In fact, he described it as a low to medium scare attraction.
Right.
And because in an industry that is always hyping up how scary we are.
Yeah.
For someone to say, we're a low to medium.
Yeah. Well, but you know what? We need that.
Yeah, we do. Oh, God, yes.
Because, I mean, I've seen what's available for kids here. Little kids. There's the... Spooky Path through the French Quarter market. That there's a guy, basically, he sets up an inflatable tunnel and has like spooky little characters in it, and there's some hay bales and stuff around it, but it's fine. But that's pretty much
Boo at the Zoo is the big one,
and
that's fine, it's cool.
That's pretty cool, yeah.
I think we went once.
No.
Oh, we didn't go?
No, it's expensive.
Oh, that's right. It's expensive, and it's a really crappy time of year because it's only a couple of nights.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, they have a very short run.
Yeah, so it's a rough time of year for us to get there. But, I mean, yeah, you have that. I mean, I guess, like, for actual haunted attractions, the best for kids would be Chamber of Horrors.
Yeah, that would be...
Because I'm not comfortable taking them to Mortuary now after the theme changes.
Yeah.
And House of Shock is obviously the House of Shock.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say Chambers is probably a 9 to 16. That age range.
I still would not say it's young kids.
No.
It is aggressively scary.
Yeah.
But, you know, you're right. In our area, we do not have any major haunted attractions that target kids. The best you've got is Boo at the Zoo, which is basically a light display at the end of the day.
Right.
So.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, and we need more attractions like this. And we need attractions in other countries like Australia.
Yeah. Yeah. We need to get out there. And it's sad that even, you know, a low to medium scare for kids... is not going to be allowed.
And one thing I find interesting is they were complaining about traffic noise and safety concerns.
And then it was out of character for the area.
Which, I mean, better, at least according to Google Maps, that's all I've got to go on. I don't have much, I admit. It's about 50 miles south of Melbourne, which is weird because, yes, Melbourne is on the coast, but it's like a bay. And like around the bay a little bit,
right.
You get the Bittern. It's definitely still in a metropolitan area. It is rural compared to Melbourne, but it is not super, super duper rural. It's not like your parents' house.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, basically 15 minutes from the nearest town of any consequence.
The nearest gas station, just put it that way.
Yeah. And the nearest gas station 3 miles away, I can run to it.
Yeah.
But that's not a gas station of consequence either.
No. Yeah.
But the point remains, it's not...
Like a general store, you would have to go
30 miles. Their definition of rural is obviously different than mine, is what I'm trying to hit at.
Okay. Fine.
I have been to rural...
Yes.
Rural Louisiana. Truly rural Louisiana. And this ain't it.
No.
But yeah, it's a little sad. It's a little disheartening. And I think, it shows that maybe in Australia and elsewhere, they don't get haunted attractions.
Right.
As well as we do. I mean, we're in a suburban-ish area of New Orleans.
Yeah.
I would say we're fairly suburban. Our neighbors get the haunted attraction. They love it.
Yeah.
They support it.
Yeah, we accidentally wound up buying a house that has had a haunted attraction in it.
Yeah.
In the garage. Pretty much by every previous owner.
Yeah, I know. It's like the weirdest coincidence. This was not disclosed by the real estate agent. We should know.
No, we moved in and then people were like, oh, you're doing a haunted attraction at the house that had a haunted attraction? It's like, okay.
Yeah, because apparently the weird thing about our house is before we bought it, it was a rental.
Right.
So you had a couple of previous long-term renters here. And both the priest who was here before us, immediately before us.
Right.
And the one before him.
Right.
Did some kind of spook house thing, either in the garage or in the front yard.
Right.
This has always been the Halloween house. We just happened to move in.
Yes. Well, you know, so our criteria for buying a house was that it had to have a garage and it had to be near a school so that we could have a haunted house. And this fits the bill.
Yes, it. Oh, and I wanted no trees in the yard.
Yes.
We screwed that one up a little bit. We have a tree on our land, technically.
Well, okay, so that grew after we built the house.
I know.
We didn't screw up. The neighbors behind us planted something, and it's more on our side than their side now.
It's a weird thing. But the bottom line remains, it helps fit the criteria, and apparently we weren't the only ones thinking of the same purpose.
Yeah.
But anyway, so yeah, it's a sad story there in Australia. Hopefully he's able to find a place to open. And it sounds like a neat idea. I like these idea of these lower scare haunted attractions. This is a part of the market that I think is underserved, especially overseas.
Right. Well, I think even here, you know, you've got school fairs, I guess, but there's not a lot for small kids. There just isn't.
Yeah. Well, moving forward a little bit here, the Airbnb of location scouting.
Yeah, I'm actually pretty excited about this.
Yeah. It's a new service called Rapalus, Rapal. That is the whole service, and by this, an article by Barbara Eldridge at Curbed is the one that we settled on. There's a bunch of articles about it. You can Google it.
Right.
But this is the one going in the show notes, damn it, because I am the king of this mountain. I have decided. But basically what Rapal does is it connects property owners, including both residential and commercial, with films who are doing shoots.
Right.
Now, they just got done launching, but they're only in Los Angeles right now.
Yeah.
They have 750 locations as of launch, and it's worth noting there have been similar services, but this is the first one that I'm aware of that allows the property owner to keep all of the money.
Yeah.
Less a 4% credit card fee. Boo-hoo.
Yeah.
Boo-hoo.
Right.
Rapal's business model, for those who are curious, is they are going to earn money through advertising. You can pay them to advertise your location to scouts, or I'm assuming you can have like a free account and just have your haunted attraction available.
Yeah, a haunted attraction or house or anything. Because you need, you know, we have people who are in the film industry, friends.
Yeah.
And they've used our house.
Yeah.
Our non-threatening blue house.
The interior of it with the god-awful tiles. And
yes. Yeah.
I'm just glad we painted the flipping walls.
Yeah, and this was actually a big problem for Chris. Maybe we'll have him on talk about it sometime.
Yeah.
But because he got told at City Park by one person there that he could shoot, so they bring everything out and all their actors and everything and equipment, start getting set up, and another park employee comes over and says, do you have a permit for that?
Yeah, this story sounds kind of familiar to us, doesn't it?
And they're like, no, the other person said that we could do this. And they're like, well, you can't. You have to have a permit, and you have to pay, like, $150.
I mean, that's a reasonable permit fee at the end of the day, but...
Yeah, but if you're not expecting it...
Yeah, and if you're not expecting it, and you thought you had permission, and you didn't...
Right, and this actually was set up by someone in a similar situation where they were having problems finding locations.
Yeah. And for a lot of haunted attractions, getting these kind of location fees is a key part of their business.
Right.
I know the 13th Gate makes a decent amount of their money from locations.
Right.
And in fact, I know there are certain parts of the haunt that are only existent because they are widely used in locations.
Right.
By film crews.
Yeah.
So, and I know the mortuary is routinely used by location scouts and by for film crews. So, yeah, this is a big part of the business model of some haunted attractions. And if you're in the LA area and you're not participating in this, why the hell not?
Yeah, and the other thing is, I'm pretty sure you could probably negotiate to get a credit for your haunted house in the credits.
Yeah.
Of the films that are shot there.
Yeah. Like, I know Rise did that with the film, the House is October build, I think was the name of the film.
I would
not have put my name in that film.
That was rough.
Yeah. We can do a whole flipping episode about that film. And we probably honestly should, because it's a very interesting portrayal of the haunted attraction industry.
It's very detrimental and makes us look bad.
Yeah. We're apparently just a bunch of rapists and thieves. We're like, the haunted attraction industry is what apparently Donald Trump thinks Mexicans are.
Oh.
According to that film. But, joking.
I know.
We're not getting political.
I'm just
here.
Adding it to the topics list, okay?
Okay, yeah. A good idea.
Because it keeps growing.
But yes.
I've added two this episode.
if you're not participating in using your haunt as a location for film shoots, it's something to look into.
Right.
Especially if you're in a city or a town that does a lot of film work. New Orleans area does. That's one of the reasons why, like I said, Baton Rouge, 13th Gate, and so forth, and gets a lot of business that way.
Right.
If you're in a flyover state, quote unquote, as they call it, it may not work as well. But if you're in an area that routinely has film shoots, give it a shot. You never know.
Well, I mean, one last thought on that is that, you know, Mississippi is one of those states you just get through as quickly as possible for most people.
Mm.
But there are people who, it's close enough to New Orleans that people can still go over there
absolutely.
And shoot.
Yeah,
so even if you're a few hours away, think about applying.
Yeah, definitely. And honestly, if all you're potentially risking is a 4% credit card fee, it's probably worth having it in, even if nothing comes of it.
Yeah.
But yes, up next, the Blackout Experiments trailer has been released. This is a film that is based upon the Blackout Haunted House, which is in New York and Los Angeles.
Right.
And it is the now famous, super intense, ultra, you know...
Yeah.
Ultra aggressive haunted attraction.
Right.
This film will be released in select theaters, July 22nd. And in the meantime... because you can check out the film at The Wrap and this article by Jeremy Fuster.
That's a good last name.
I was just thinking, it's a very cool, very interesting last name, Jeremy Fuster. But regardless, I watched the trailer.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what to think about this.
Yeah, I don't know.
I honestly don't know if I'm going to see this film, at least not initially.
Well, I don't know if we'll be able to.
Yeah, true. Select theaters may not mean one close to us.
Yeah, it probably won't.
Yeah, it's a little bit unfortunate in that regard, but, I don't know. The trailer, it plays the Blackout and like it's just a horror film.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It makes it look like a generic horror film, to me at least.
Uh-huh.
Until I interpreted it. And one of the things that we talk about on the show when we're doing the show notes is we try to decide how much film coverage we're going to do. And yeah, it basically makes it look like it's just an ordinary horror film with, you know, masked people trying to hurt you and all this stuff.
Right.
And yeah, people look genuinely terrified in it, but it doesn't look like a documentary.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Hopefully it's at least a little more honest than House's October Bill, because that was just a complete fabrication of everything.
Yeah, I mean, the portrayal of our industry in film is it's very bizarre to me, because on one hand, we're an industry that wants to scare people.
Right.
So, of course, our portrayals in the film industry should be scary.
Yeah.
Obviously, duh. But the way they make it scary is that, you know, they don't talk about ghosts and legends at these haunts or something like that.
Yeah.
They talk about how all the people who run these haunts are terrible individuals that are going to hurt you.
Yeah, and that's just crazy. I mean, we need to care about how our industry is represented.
Yeah, we do.
To the public, in all aspects.
And it's weird, because it's like, we get treated worse than actual carnies do. You know what I mean?
Well, I think, in a way, we're sort of modern-day carnies.
In some ways we are, yes.
We're very related to it.
The spirit of it. But it's always interesting, because whenever a haunted attraction is talked about in a film, it seems like, and it feels like to me, that it is portrayed in such a way that the haunted attraction owners are reckless, they're dangerous, they're out to hurt people for real.
Right.
And yeah, that amps up the scare that makes people, you know, afraid of haunted attractions, but it can also make people legitimately afraid to go.
Yeah.
You know, there's a big difference between I'm going to be so scared at this haunted attraction and I am going to legitimately be, you know, injured or killed at this haunted attraction.
Yeah, and it's the whole perceived threat versus real threat argument.
People come to us to be scared, but they want to be scared in the same sense they're scared on a roller coaster.
Right.
Where they know they're safe.
That exhilarating thrill.
In a completely harmless environment.
Yes.
That's what they want. And oftentimes it seems like the film's like, it's like, as if the films were advertising the termites eating the roller coaster.
Yeah, exactly. Or as my dad pointing out, the screws wiggling as the roller coaster goes by, and the rotted pieces of wood, and yeah.
Yeah, that's what it feels like we're being promoted as, and that... Yeah. In the end, if it's overdone, can really hurt the industry, I think.
Yeah.
That's a topic. That could be a full hour-long topic. Various portrayals of...
Yeah, I think we should watch the movie and then talk about it and House's October Bill same thing. And I'm sure there are more.
Oh, yeah, and we definitely need to Google and make sure... I know I'm forgetting some, because we're sleep-deprived pretty bad right now.
Yeah.
I know I'm forgetting some.
Well, we also had that one that we watched about the guy who went pro. From Home Haunt, which was
That was a very, very good portrayal.
Yeah.
What was it called? American Haunting?
America Haunter? Something like that. We'll figure it out later, though, and do an episode on all those together.
On all those films, yeah. It was actually a very, very interesting film. There's good stuff, but that's just it. The better portrayals tend to be documentaries focusing on haunters.
Yeah, and it
was... Which is, I think, pretty cool, but...
Yeah.
Anyway... Well, our final story this week, and also the topic in which we can powwow around for at least a few minutes. We got a little extra time. We got about 10 minutes or so left.
Okay.
5 to 10 minutes at least. We need more kid horror.
Yay!
This is an article by Derek Farasi at Blumhouse. Mm-hmm. And basically, he's lamenting that there's no equivalent to Goosebumps, Are You Afraid of the Dark, Gremlins, Monster Squad, etc., going on right now for kids.
Yeah.
We have a generation, according to him, we have a generation growing up without that kid-friendly horror.
Right. Something that wasn't listed on here, actually, is Casper. I think that was probably when I was really, really little. It's like, don't be afraid of ghosts. They're friendly.
Yeah, they're friendly ghosts.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally friendly ghosts.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, but I
but
have
even
to...
something like that doesn't exist now for kids.
Not really, no. And I think part of this is we've been seeing a nuclear arms race in haunting and fear in general. And it's not just in the haunted attraction industry. It is in films. It's in video games. It's everywhere. This arms race where we're trying to be the scariest, the best.
Right.
The toughest. And, you know, and you see this in every fear-based medium here. And the result of that is there's an entire market that's underserved now.
Yeah. Yeah, everybody wants to get to kids whenever they're not kids anymore.
Yeah.
But if you don't instill that love from a young age, then they're not going to want to go as adults.
Yeah, and that's one of the problems is this arms race, I think, it's sort of exchanging short-term gain.
Right.
Because, yes, being the scariest will get people out to your haunt in droves. Being the scariest will get you the media attention, etc.
Right.
There's a reason McCamey Manor and the Blackout have been successful. They've gotten oodles of media attention. They've gotten
right.
that coverage.
There's a reason we know who they are
We live nowhere near either of them.
Right.
There's a reason why they've had that success. And it's because of that. But the problem is that undermines the industry because now we're not training the younger generation that haunting is fun.
Yeah. Yeah, there's... I mean, I guess Scooby-Doo's still on.
Yeah. Well, then,
but
that was going to be my counterpoint is you can still watch Goosebumps. It's in Netflix, last I checked. Or
yeah.
Hulu or one or the other.
Yeah. It's,
and Are You Afraid of the Dark? I'm pretty sure it's available somewhere. I didn't look. You can still watch these movies.
Yeah.
But these movies and shows
are 80s. Books.
Or read the books. These movies are now 80s and 90s, though. Movies and books are 80s and
yeah.
90s. How long are they going to hold up?
Well, we've recently rewatched a lot of the Goosebumps
episodes.
Actually,
we power watched the entire Goosebumps. We did not rewatch some Goosebumps. No. Do not mislead the audience
yeah.
in what we did.
We watched all of them.
We watched all the Goosebumps, at least all the ones that were available.
In like
Netflix
a couple weeks. Yeah.
We did it pretty quick, too.
So, as far as the storyline goes, the storylines hold up. The special effects from the 80s, though.
Well, honestly, they didn't hold up even when they aired as part of that.
Well, yeah, that's true. But, I mean, for the generations now who are used to super graphics and
yeah.
even their video games, they're just going to look at that and go, what the hell is that supposed to do? And it's going to take them completely out of it.
You know, and this is actually an issue to me because, I mean, I got a reminder of this last night when we went to a concert and it was Panic! In the Disco and Weezer. We mentioned
yeah.
this when we first started the show. And we were with two 16-ish year olds.
Right.
And they had no idea who Weezer was.
Yeah.
They were there for Panic! At the Disco. They liked Panic! At the Disco. And hey, Panic! At the Disco is fine. I ain't got nothing against them. They put on a banging concert, man.
Yeah, I like them. I yeah. listen to them when I work out.
And,
so.
And then I've got to say, watching their show, you know, they can convert me through their concert. Their live show is really good. They can convert me. But the point of the matter is, they didn't know who Weezer was. Weezer had hits, you know, in like not that long ago.
Yeah. And the thing is that them and like a significant portion of the teenagers
mm-hmm.
left after Panic.
Yeah. Yeah, Pork and Beans, by the way, was 2008, and they've had hits since then.
Yeah.
It was one of the first viral music videos, if I remember correctly.
Yes.
So, yeah, that's how short memories are for this type of stuff.
Right. Well, I mean, it's like Weird Al says, every time he comes out with a new album, they're like,
comeback.
Oh, you're still making stuff?
You're alive?
It's like, I just released one last year or the year before. What are you talking about?
If we want to keep haunts and horror relevant to new generations, we have to keep cranking out stuff targeted at them
right.
very, very regularly.
Yeah. Do you think this is anything to do with the helicopter parents not wanting their kids to have any exposure to anything bad?
Maybe some of it. I think there might be a little bit of that.
Yeah.
But,
I don't know. It just popped in my brain, so it came
yeah,
out of my mouth.
And I can understand that, but that's a valid question, and maybe it does. But honestly, and it's weird because I can't think of... I would like to... If that were the case, it would be an issue of, okay, they've been putting out these films, and they've been putting out these books, and they've been failing.
Right.
I'm not even seeing the books and the movies.
No. Well, I mean, Monsters, Inc. was probably the last one I can remember clearly.
Yeah.
It was pretty successful.
Yeah, it was.
But there's
Hotel Transylvania.
Yeah. So there's been some animated films.
Yeah, but they're not horror films.
No.
And I do think Hotel Transylvania, actually, by the way, is a great great example of that you can have scary and funny and these characters in a kid-friendly environment.
Right.
They made a kid movie about freaking vampires.
Yeah.
Still more badass than Twilight. God.
Speaking of not knowing.
Yeah.
So, our 16-year-old.
Okay.
Did not know that the Addams Family was more than just a movie.
Yeah, that hurt. That hurt, man.
Like, how could you not know that?
That hurt bad.
Yeah, I immediately put it on Netflix and we watched one.
thank you for fixing that. I mean, Carolyn Jones, hello.
I know. Yeah.
Wow. But A is that, and B, yeah, that has to be fixed. Thank you for addressing that issue.
Yeah.
That's an example of the problem, though. If we don't keep targeting this demographic, we're going to lose them.
Yeah.
And then they're going to grow up to be adults that don't see any point in haunted attractions or horror films or things like that.
Right.
You and I, I'm sure we had our own moments as kids. What was your horror film moment growing up, or one of them, at least?
That's kind of tricky for me.
Yeah, I can understand that.
Because I wasn't really allowed to watch them.
Well, you eventually came around and started.
Yeah, but I was late teens.
Yeah.
Whenever I started sneaking them onto the TV. Because I still wasn't technically allowed. But I grew up in a weird household.
Yeah, we get that.
But there were always things that were scary.
Yeah.
You know, I would do the little haunted houses at the school, you know, the haunted school bus, and I'd be so scared to go in, and then I would go in.
Yeah.
I have haunt experiences more than horror film things. And I read the Goosebumps series. I read, there was an author called AVI. I read Koontz, and, you know, I read a lot.
Yeah.
And most of the stuff I read was darker stories.
Oh, there! I had not heard of AVI until now. I just looked this lady up.
Oh, okay.
I
didn't know if it was male, if they were male or female. I just knew that I read their books when I was little.
That's the photo by Catherine Ward. Okay,
yeah. But I read a lot of mystery. And me and my dad would sit there and talk about things that we wanted to do for Halloween and how we wanted to scare people. And I always wanted to be the scary person, the scary kid for Halloween.
It was in the blood, though.
Yeah.
But you still had those exposures, goosebumps
right.
and things like
I
that.
I could still find things that were age-appropriate for me.
And for me, the moment, and it's like I jokingly tell everyone, without Michael Jackson, I probably never would have been in the haunted.
Yes.
Michael Jackson's Thriller was it is literally a turning point in my life when I first saw that.
I can understand that. Because, okay, so you saw it.
Yeah.
But the first time I remember it coming on the radio, my cousin and I were on a gas station run. He was older than me. I was like 6 or 7. I don't know when it came out. Whenever it came out.
Yeah.
I was in the car. I was left in the car with the radio and the air conditioner on.
Mm-hmm.
And Vincent Price came over the airwaves, and I was fucking terrified.
Oh, man. Yeah, so that was a turning point in my life, was seeing the Thriller music video and hearing the song. I was already a huge Michael Jackson fan when it came on.
Right.
But, man, that instilled a love for haunting. I was even younger when I first saw it, because I don't think I was allowed to see it when it first came out, but I saw it soon thereafter.
Right.
And I remember thinking, I don't know what this is, but I love it.
Yeah.
I want this in my life.
Right.
I need this. And then it sort of grew from there. Now, we're running out of time. but one thing that was interesting in this article real fast was the author proposed more films like Krampus.
Yeah.
And we actually saw Krampus in theaters.
We did.
And we don't go to many horror films in theaters because, you know, we have, like, the mega DVD collection of Haunted. It's like, we want to watch a horror film, we have 80 million over here.
We have two bookcases full of horror films.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
But what do you think about films like Krampus for kids?
I think it's a fine idea.
I thought it was, and it's really weird because when he said that, my first thought was, that's not a kid's horror film. And then I thought, why not?
Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah, I mean...
What in it was not kid-friendly or kid-appropriate, and I couldn't think of anything.
No. I mean, it had, you know, interesting deaths. That was... In fact, after we saw that in theaters, we came home and watched, like, four more Krampus
movies. Oh, no, we watched... No, you're misleading the audience again, Darnell. We watched every Krampus horror film we could find.
Which was about four?
I think it was like six, actually, okay. Counting the short films, too.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
We found some short films. We literally like got on Amazon and iTunes and everything.
Yes. Apparently what we do is we think of something we want to do, and then we just consume it.
Yeah, there's no haunter in the world that can relate to that, sweetheart. I'm sure no one in this listening to the podcast can relate to that. But yeah, I think that's actually a good point. I did not think of that as a kid's horror film, mostly because the protagonists were not children.
Right.
Like with Monster Squad and so forth, they were kids. And even like in Gremlins, they were kids.
Right.
And most of the Goosebumps stories, etc. But yeah, even without the children protagonists,
right,
it still was a kid-friendly film.
Yeah, it's still grandma telling story to her kid.
And I would still like to see more... kid-focused films, honestly. Yeah. A, because they're a lot of fun, and B, because we do have to prime the pump, so to speak, for the next generation of Haunt fans.
Right.
So, and also, Haunters, as we've said earlier, there is an underserved audience with lighter, scare, more kid-friendly Haunts right now.
Yeah.
I think this is something we should really be focusing on as an industry. Well, that's about all we have right now, isn't it? Do you have anything else you want to add?
Nope.
Okay, you sure?
Yeah.
You give a look. Well, on that note, everyone, thank you very much for joining us. Please definitely take the moment of your day. Like us on Facebook, where we are Haunt Weekly. Like, follow us on Twitter at Haunt Weekly. And like I said, we are working on a new website with all kinds of new goodies and conference stuff and all that. We will be reporting it here as soon as we're able to get that live. In the meantime, thank you very much for your time and attention, and we will see you guys next week.